Hey, look, you want to see a magic trick?
This is an audio podcast, bro.
Oh, fuck.
Another digital citizen. Another digital citizen.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this magical podcast. It's another digital citizen. With me, I have Luke.
Hi, Fro. Hi, everybody. Yeah, I'm your beautiful assistant, I guess. Yeah.
Or am I yours?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess we're both. Can we just both be beautiful assistants, and then there, like, we get rid of the actual the magic magician? Yeah, just get rid of. Yes. That guy's cheesy, anyways. Nobody really likes that guy.
True. How's your week been?
Interesting, I guess. Busy. Lots of work. I've got two cats, and one of them loves to be petted and picked up and, you know, cuddle, all that stuff. The other one, ever since she was a kitten, has not liked getting picked up. Like, she likes being petted occasionally. So, okay. The last few months, I've been doing a thing where I will pick her up once a day. Once a day, mm-hmm. just tested it. And then, since then, I don't know, at the beginning of the year, maybe, if I pick her up and she doesn't struggle, I'll give her a treat. And if I pick her up and she does struggle, then I don't give her a treat in, like, training mode.
Ah, right? Pablo.
Right.
Yes,
and,
very good.
And so this week I picked her up and she let me pet her and I set her down and it was the first time that happened, which was exciting for me, at least. Mm. Because it's been months of training for that to happen. But it only happened once. We'll see how long. I'm just going to keep doing it and see what happens. But it works. That training Pavlov stuff definitely works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pablo had something going, is what you're saying.
And that, you know, animals are smart. Smarter than you think. They know, they're like, okay, if I do this, I'm going to get treat. That's like the extent of the smartness, but it's there for sure.
Yeah, my week has been filled with Eurovision and a little bit of Eurovision. And don't you know, maybe it has been a little bit of Eurovision.
Oh, yeah, because the semifinal was yesterday, right?
The first semifinal.
First semifinal, right.
We'll talk about that a little bit later. Norway is tomorrow. And then we have the big shebang on Saturday. So I'm in Eurovision mood.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing a podcast, audio podcast now. Let's do some audio podcast news.
Okay.
Biden withholding bomb shipments to Israel out of fears it could be used in Rafah. This week, the Israel government said they were going into Rafah. The Biden administration has disagreed with this for weeks and weeks now. The Biden administration has opted to pause some 3,500 bombs to Israel last week because of concerns the weapons could be used in Rafah, where more than 1 million civilians are sheltering. Other weapon transfers from the U.S. to Israel include the sales of JDAM kits, or Joint Direct Attack Munitions, and are closely being scrutinized as part of a larger review of U.S. military aid to Israel. This began last month. The decision to pause the shipment and consider slow-walking other shipments is a major shift in the policy of the Biden administration. This is the first known case of the U.S. denying Israel military aid since the Hamas war began, right, in Gaza.
But I read that there was a statement here. They said, but you see, it's not me, it's not my family, it's in your head. They are fighting with their tanks and their bombs and their guns. It's in your head, and in your head, they are crying.
Was that was from the press secretary? Yeah.
Yes.
I thought so.
Yeah.
No, actually, the next day after they released this, I think even maybe the same day, Biden made a speech. It was at a Holocaust memorial thing because I think it's the anniversary of when the Jews were released from the camps this week.
Okay.
So Biden was doing a speech at some event for that, recognizing that, and saying that he fully supports 100% Israel. So they're doing one thing, and then Biden's out there saying another thing is the weird part. Right.
It's almost like he's a politician, and they do a lot of, like, double talk or something.
Double speak, yeah. I mean, Biden has said in the past he is 100% a Zionist. Like, he isn't hiding the fact that that's what his take on the situation is, so.
And we all love Zionists, don't we?
Yeah.
They are the best.
It was a word that you, like, literally weren't allowed to say for, like, years and years and years. It was something you weren't even allowed to discuss, necessarily, or even if you said it about somebody, it was considered, like, rude or even racist to a degree.
Yeah, right. Now people are, like, being proud of it.
Now people are calling themselves that. Yeah, it's very strange. The shift in everything, for sure.
As a pacifist, I just find this war is just, like, fucking hell. I'm a tiny bit tired of the United States being in the back pocket of Israel, I have to say. I mean, fucking hell, relax.
You blame TikTok mostly for this whole thing, right?
Oh, well, that and Russia. Don't forget Russia.
Yeah, Russia, Vladimir Putin, and TikTok, which is owned by China, and so then we gotta blame China, and so, we'll go to war with them soon. But social media sites like TikTok are partly to blame for widespread criticism of the Israeli war, said U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken.
What?
They're partly to blame for the widespread criticism of it. That's what he says. The comments came as part of a McCain Institute, forum in Sedona, Arizona, between Blinken and Senator Mitt Romney, of all people. The Utah Republican asked the top diplomat why the PR has been so awful against the PR has been so awful for Israel since the October 7th. That's what he said. In quotes. The PR.
Yep.
Why has Hamas disappeared?
Nothing to do with the war. Absolutely nothing to do with the war. How dare we say that?
He says, "Why has Hamas disappeared from the terms of public perception?" He continued. Offer is on the table to ceasefire, and yet the world is screaming about what Israel's doing. Mr. Blinken said part of the reason for the dynamic changing media environment where people were no longer reading from the same authoritative news sources, this is from Blinken. Now, of course, we're on an intravenous feed of information with new impulses, inputs every millisecond, and of course, the way this has played out on social media has dominated the narrative. You have social media ecosystems and environments in which context, histories, and facts get lost, and the emotions and impacts and images dominate. We can't discount that, but I think it also has a very, very challenging effects on the narrative. Right.
The narrative. Okay.
Like I said, he said, we no longer all read from the same authoritative news sources and instead learn about current events from chaotic social media feeds. So what he's saying is, we know, this is like a dumbed down version of it. I listened to the actual clip. He says, we don't go home at night and turn the 6:30 nightly news on and everybody watch it and then get indoctrinated by that. So what they're admitting out loud is the reason they want to get TikTok banned is because they can't control the narrative. He literally said that. What they're saying is, they don't care, like, the excuse of, it's a foreign power who's, like, going to manipulate people. What he's saying is that we as America, when we just had, like, ABC News, NBC News, CBS News, and there were five, like, small news channels that everybody watched at 6:30 for an hour, it was easy to control the narrative of war and convince everybody to agree to it. Now, that's not the case, and so we need to get rid of those anti-war voices, and what they're saying is TikTok is that. Right. I mean, that's against the First Amendment directly. Like, if you're banning TikTok because of foreign, some kind of foreign government interference in elections, that may be one thing if you had proof of it, which they don't. But to say that you're shutting it down because it has overwhelming support on there for Palestinians. He said it at one point. Let me find it. It says, the U.S. Secretary at another point in the conversation emphasized the inescapable reality that Palestinians continue to suffer vigorously. We have to focus and be attentive on that. But there is such overwhelming support for the U.S. shutdown on TikTok. He described, where does it say it? Well, does it say it here? They basically say that there's more pro-Palestine content on TikTok than there is pro-Israel content on TikTok, and that is their justification for why it's pro-Palestine. But when you think about it, like, what are you comparing that to?
Yeah.
Are you comparing it to Twitter? Are you comparing it to Facebook? Like, what is the comparison that you're making to say that this is... 'cause what I've seen is that people found the breakdown of, like, how young people feel about the war in Gaza, as far as, like, their feelings on it, and the breakdown of how young people feel about the war and how much pro-Palestinian content is on TikTok are equivalent as far as percentages go, which shows you that it's not...
Weird.
It's not being, like, manufactured by TikTok. It's just the sentiment of young people that's being shown on TikTok, and... politicians don't like that because
we can't have it like that. How dare we? I mean, that would be awful if people had their opinion out there. I mean, come on.
I don't even think it's just that. It's like the IDF is on TikTok posting videos and people are seeing what the IDF is doing, and they're actually posting their own, like, war crimes, so everybody can see that. It's not hidden, you know, and that's what they don't like about it. They want it to be Walter Cronkite telling you what the U.S. government told him to say every night, right? That's they want it to be the 90s again. I think even Anthony Blinken in this said, I started when I was in the 90s, and the way information was handled was a whole different thing in the 90s. Yeah, and I think that goes to...
I mean, he's not wrong about that, to be fair.
No, but I think they are unwilling to, like, come to terms with the new reality of information in the world. And instead of just trying to work with that and not be the bad guy, they're choosing to hide dissent and try to avoid... they want to continue what they're doing without scrutiny. Right? That's what it is. Yeah.
That scares the fuck out of me, to be honest. I mean, I think that is so fucking atrocious.
I mean, that's directly like 1984 shit, right?
Yeah. Like I said, that scares the fuck out of me. If that's like... If that is your... excuse, I don't really buy into it.
It also, like, did they forget they were on camera and that they were being filmed in this conversation? Like, they were saying the shit you're not supposed to say out loud.
Yeah.
But they were in front of a whole bunch of, like, probably elite, rich-ass people at this forum, so...
Yeah, but still, isn't that fucking scary? Don't you think that's scary to hear?
I think it's... The precedent is even scarier than the initial, like, banning of TikTok, which we should mention, TikTok is said now they're going to sue the U.S. government for First Amendment violations, because it would be like saying that a newspaper could no longer publish unless it was owned by a U.S. company, basically. In the same way, a media company, that's what they're suing for. But yeah, the precedent is that then in the future, say Donald Trump or somebody even more Donald Trump-like gets into office in the future, then the precedent is set to be able to ban anything that dissents from anything the government doesn't like. So any website, once the precedent is set, could then be banned because any future administration doesn't like what it has to say, right? That's the scariest part.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's trending in the wrong direction, definitely. It seems like it's cutting down, like you said, the First Amendment rights of free speech.
And I think you're right in that the idea that, oh, the problem here is the PR. Like, the public relations, the way we're telling people about it is the issue, not the killing of 30,000 children. That wasn't the problem. Yeah. That's not why people are mad about it, right? It's that we're not getting the point across well enough that Hamas bad. Yeah.
And that is such a... It's such a fucking cop-out.
But it's this,
such a...
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah. No, come on.
It's the same thing they do to the protesters by saying they're not anti-war, they're pro-Hamas. And it's the same mentality as, like, we're not doing anything wrong, so it must be that they're on the bad guy's side. It's not that they don't like both of us. It's not that they hate the U.S. and Israel and Hamas. It's that they must be for Hamas. And it's like, those two things aren't mutually exclusive, right?
Yeah. No. Like... I can hate Hamas and Israel at the same time. It's weird how the human brain works sometimes.
And yet they are unwilling to admit that, or they're not admitting it on purpose to further an agenda. One or the other.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the second.
Wow. At least you can smoke marijuana and forget about the war, right?
Not quite, but closer to that, the U.S. DEA will move to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug, the Associated Press has learned. The proposal, which must be reviewed by the White House, would recognize the medical uses of cannabis and acknowledge it has less potential for abuse than most other drugs. However, it would not legalize marijuana outright for recreational use in the U.S. The agency's move confirmed to the AP that Tuesday, on Tuesday by five people. So it hasn't been released, but according to the AP, five people that they trust have said that this is coming down the pipeline. Right. Yeah. And that they're going to move it to Schedule 3 instead of Schedule 1, which Schedule 1 is the same like heroin and all these other things.
Because heroin and marijuana is totally the same thing.
Which has been a ridiculous thing for years, and everybody's pointed it out. So putting it on Schedule 3 is good, and it's the right move. But like we've said in the past, if Biden really wanted to get a leg up on the election, he would have legalized marijuana, which he can do as the president through presidential order. He doesn't need anybody to sign off on it. So, yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he has the ability to do that.
Oh.
Trump could have done it, too. He didn't do it either. So, there's that.
Well, hopefully you get a good president in the election this time. Oh, wait.
I was going to say, in 8 years, maybe?
Yeah. So, Luke, do you feel like a lucky person?
Sometimes.
Yeah?
I mean, luck is like a every once in a while thing. That's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think luck is like karma in that... If you get really lucky, beware, because pretty soon something bad's going to happen to you. That's the way I look at luck.
I kind of agree. So if you would have won, let's say, $1 million, would you play the lottery again?
I mean, maybe if it was just habit, if it was something you just did, like every Sunday you went and bought a lottery ticket and just totally out of habit, then maybe, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because Massachusetts woman wins second $1 million lottery prize in 10 weeks. How the fuck?
You know they're going to investigate this as, like, some... Look into it for, like, some kind
of... So weird.
You know, I remember there was like a lottery scam where some guy had figured out, there was a documentary about it. He had figured yes. out a mathematical formula of how to find the winning ticket or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they're going to look into this lady, because this is just way too convenient, right?
I think it is a tiny bit convenient, yes.
But Christina Wilson of Attleboro recently claimed a $1 million jackpot prize from the Massachusetts State Lottery, which she announced it on Wednesday, May 1st. Amazingly, it marked the second of her $1 million prizes she had won in just 10 weeks. Wilson's latest winnings came from playing a 100x scratch ticket. The game involves matching any number of the player's numbers or bonus numbers to win any number. Well, that's confusing. Wilson,
yeah, that was
a scratch-out's not that complicated. You do scratch it, and then you match the amounts. I don't know why they had to say it like that.
Weird way.
In February, she claimed her first $1 million prize after playing Lifetime Millions $50 instant ticket game she bought at a discount liquor in Mansfield, Massachusetts. Okay. Her first jackpot prize in February, Wilson opted to cash out for the $650,000 before taxes. So if you don't know, with the lottery in America, you can either get it in installments. So if you got a million, you could say, oh, I want this amount per month, and they'll give you a million over that time period. Or you can cash out, and they'll give you less money, but you get it all in one big lump sum. So the first one, she went with that. I would imagine if you already have that much money, then just go with the second one month to month.
I would go with the second one then,
Right, because then you're already set, and then you kind of have a steady cash flow happening also.
Exactly.
Yeah, but like I said, I have this feeling in the back of my mind that something nefarious is happening here, right? Like, she's got a genius son who's using some type of AI tool to, you know what I mean? To, like, track all the winning numbers and stuff and find, like, the perfect place for her to go. I don't know, I have a feeling there's something going on here.
It smells a bit fishy, or maybe she has that leaflet that Marty McFly had and lost it in.
Oh, right.
Back to the Future 2.
Biff. Biff. Yeah. Right. Buff is from the Cinnamon Toast Ken channel.
Yeah, maybe she's a time traveler.
That's possible. How would, even with time travel, how would you know where the scratch-off ticket was going to be, I guess?
Because then you know who wins it, when, and where.
And you show up, like, 10 minutes before that, exactly. And you just buy, like, 20 or 30 tickets. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, exactly. That's how you do it.
That would work. You're correct, if you had time travel. But I think my idea of her son being, like, some kind of computer genius using an AI tool is better for, like, a movie, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because the time traveling thing has been done.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a little bit played out. Yeah.
Maybe she will use that time traveling thing to communicate with whales?
Well, that's what they did in Star Trek 3, right? They went around the sun to save the whales. Wasn't that Star Trek 3?
I think that was Star Trek.
Let me double check.
I think that was Star Trek 3. Or it was Superman 3.
No, Superman 3 was the one where the woman gets eaten by the computer.
Oh, that. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was so good.
I think this must have been, is this it? I can't read it. Why won't it let me read it? No, maybe not. Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. So which one was the one with... Go into the article and I'll look this up. Whales.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so scientists have documented remarkable sperm whale phonetic alphabet. What? That reminds me of Thank You for All the Fish. Various species of whales in Earth's oceans employ different types of vocalization to communicate. Sperm whales, the largest of the toothed whales, communicate by using burst of clicking noise called Codex, sounding a bit like Morse code. An analysis of years of vocalization by sperm whales in the Eastern Caribbean has found that their system of communication is more sophisticated than previously known, exhibiting a complex infrastructure replicate with a phonetic alphabet. That is so fucking
interesting. So we can understand what they're saying now, is what that means. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It says they're very social animals with their calls, an integral part of this. The new study has provided a fuller understanding of how they communicate. It says the Massachusetts Institute of Technology doctoral student in robotics and machine learning led the author to study published on Tuesday in the Journal of Nature Communications, which I didn't... Is that a thing? Nature... I guess that makes sense.
I didn't know that was a thing.
What that means to me is there's a whole group of people studying other animals and how they talk to each other.
I mean, we had already a song about that with What Does the Fox Say? So,
well, there was Coco, the ape or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But wasn't that fake? I think we found out that was
fake. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I found out yesterday, I didn't ever know this until yesterday. I was listening to a podcast and somebody said that the woman who, I think Jane Goodall, like, she forced researchers to show the monkey their boobs or something.
Mm.
It was like, it's now a huge scandal, I guess. I didn't ever know that until this week.
Okay.
There was like a sexual harassment thing where she forced forced interns to show Coco their boobs, because I guess Coco really liked human boobs for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you find the movie, by the way?
Oh, right. It's Star Trek 4, so it's just one-off.
One-off. Okay.
A ragtag crew from the USS Enterprise steal a starship after receiving a planetary distress from Earth. A space probe has entered the orbit around Earth, disabling the global power on the planet. The rest of the officers travel back in time to retrieve now-extinct humpback whales, which Spock has deduced will communicate with the probe and send it away from Earth. Literally, what we were talking about, it was just the plot of Star Trek 4. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, no, but this is super interesting. I mean, if we can communicate with whales, that sounds like a cool thing.
I think it will learn a lot, and it makes me wonder, if we're able to, like, really break it down, I think learning about how, like, their defenses against other animals could teach us about those other animals. Like, because if we can understand what they're saying about the other animals, it'll teach us about those animals, which is, I don't know how deep we can go with, like, the phonetic alphabet, but that's interesting.
Mm. What kind of alphabet do you think Trun use when he talks the truth?
I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's Norwegian.
Okay.
Yeah. But he's going to tell the truth about screw the corporations.
This is Trun, but Trun tells the truth. Do you remember the warning signs? So if you download something, it's the same as stealing. Yeah. I do remember them, and I still stole. I still used Napster, I still used LimeWire. And other companies come and say, like, yeah, but you are screwing the artists. You're taking away all the things the artist stands for, and you're screwing them. Like the record companies haven't screwed people for years. Well, I mean, Gene Simmons went out and said that rock and roll is dead because people downloading anything from the internet and piracy just became legal, and the rock fans are destroying the music business. Well, if it comes to destroying the music business and the big corporations, I think it's a good thing. And they're throwing people that you used to screw in front of them. I think it's pathetic. Gene Simmons made a lot of money on, merchandising and being good at selling the image of Kiss. And that's very good work done. But be honest with you, Kiss haven't given out any relevant music since the early 90s. And you're reproducing the same nostalgic act all over again. Even nearly lip sync on the last tour. How pathetic is that? Even though let's go back in history, because all those big corporations, they bought all the small companies and so on. They took a big ride on all the independent radio stations also in America, United States in the 90s. So in the end of the 90s, there were like four or five big companies had 80% of the market. Wow, how sweet is that? You're not very rock and roll if you have to be accepted by CEOs in major big companies. You're not. If the big rock and roll business is there, I think it's fucking cool. Because rock and roll was never meant to be a fucking business. Not at all. I think it's beautiful. But it's also the business is destroyed by things that they don't want to talk about. And that's when I'm coming more into this segment. A lot of things that they used to do before that somebody, very few people know. No, a lot of people do know. It's not that difficult to make a music video with good quality anymore. I've seen YouTubers making fucking hell of good videos. And I remember how local TV was in the 90s. It was not very good when young people today can do those things. The art of producing, the art of learning techniques and so on, a lot of people can do that. And a lot of people can do it. Business models, the big companies are getting destroyed. You can create our own fucking record in your own home. Yeah, you can do that. And you can do your own company, you can produce your own CD and sell it. But a lot of other people can do that too, so the competition is very hard. A lot of big companies want us to believe that they depend on them. But they never want you to have the power they have. They don't want you to have technology be selfish. Could you think for yourself? That's why they don't want solar energy, because you can produce your own energy. You can have light bulbs who last over 100 years. They don't want you to have that, because they want you to buy trash, and buy trash. They don't want you to... Yeah, you get the fucking drift there. So maybe all those big fucking major corporations, now like Disney, who own fucking everything. If they're talking about stealing, well, give me the reason to fucking not steal from them. I want to fucking steal from Disney. I want to steal, and I want everyone to do so. No, because those fucking big mastodon of corporations, they already pulled up the ladder. They own everything, they decide everything, and soon maybe they will go to war against authorities and government and everybody. Yeah, they own the world. Coke, Disney, you fucking get the drift here. So if you can screw them every way you can. Take the fucking money, steal all the fucking property, and spread the news to the rest of the world. This was Trond with Trond Tells the Truth. Have a fucking happy day.
That was Trond telling the truth. Thank you as always, Trond.
Thank you, Trond. Let's do some TV. I saw something you saw last week, I think. Zillow Gone Wild.
Yeah.
With the guy from 30 Rock. I don't know if you mentioned that last week. But
I don't
like,
know if I did. Yeah,
I don't remember it, but I might have just missed it. The guy who plays the bellhop or whatever. What is he? The concierge in 30 Rock? Mm. He's funny. I like him as the host. But the whole thing's a giant Zillow commercial, right? I mean, literally. Yep. Like, some shows, you're like, oh, this is just... Like, I think last week I talked about... a reality show that was just based around somebody's business. I think it was, I don't remember what it was exactly, but a restaurant or something like that. But this is like more than that, in that they're actually selling you things in this television show. Because the houses they're showing you, at the end they go, oh, this is still for sale on Zillow. So it's like actually a commercial. It's like they're literally selling, it's like a 30-minute infomercial, and it's on Max. Which means you're paying for HBO Max for them to make a TV show that's just a big infomercial. That's a little annoying. Like, if it was on free TV, it would be one thing, right? Yeah.
You know, I totally agree. I thought it was so incredibly stupid and so bad.
I think if you're into, like, house tours on YouTube, you know, if you like going on Zillow and looking at houses, which a lot of people, that's just like they like doing that. That's kind of an interesting part of it, and the host is decent. He's kind of funny and quirky, but it's just such a commercial. It's really gross. It's grosser than anything. Like, the show itself can be entertaining, but I'd give it a 2.5 altogether.
Yeah, I have seen a lot of things that I know that you have not seen, because it's either in the UK or Apple TV. So let's start with one of those things. Actually, the best thing I've seen this week. It's called Hollywood Con Queen. This is a documentary in 3 episodes on Apple TV Plus.
Okay.
It is extremely uninteresting story that has been made extremely interesting through this documentary. So it's one of the biggest scams in Hollywood. There is this guy that has been like dubbed the con queen, that has like impersonated the voice of the most like powerful women in Hollywood, like Caitlin Kennedy.
What, like over the phone? That.
Yeah.
Okay.
To send them to Indonesia and get them to use a lot of money there and pay people a lot of money. And they have been, like, scammed. I think it was, like, $3 million. Some of the people, like, kind of deserved it, to be honest. But this figure and how they did it and why they did it and the interview with this person, holy fuck, that was one of the most interesting things. So I would say the first episode is kind of, it's not that interesting, but second episode was super interesting, and then the third one was like blew my socks off interesting.
Okay.
So saying that, I will give it a 7.5. I really, really enjoyed it. I think not you, but people out there should go out there of their way and see this. It's called Hollywood Con Queen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else did happen this week? Let's Sin City Murders on Peacock.
Okay.
Guess what this is about, Fro?
Is there about murders in Las Vegas by any chance?
It is, and it...
Whoa! I'm so good at guessing.
This is one of those TV shows. You remember, at least before the podcast boom of true crime, there was like definitely a negative stigma behind true crime content because it was really cheesy and not well produced. And then podcasts kind of changed that. And I guess Netflix also kind of popularized the good true crime TV show. This is like the old 2000s, 90s version of like the bad true crime. You know,
where is this?
Peacock.
Okay.
The whole season was out, actually. But it's terrible. Okay. I wouldn't watch it at all. It's a lot of reenactment stuff. Tons of talking head interviews with just, you know, the cops that were on the scene at the time and things like that. Very cheap. Very badly produced. I mean, some of the stories are interesting, but not like... There's no story in here that you're going to know from the news outside of the show itself, right? They're very low-level kind of murders, all but like you said, all based in Las Vegas. Very poorly produced show. It just, like, they put it out to put it out, and like I said, it felt super dated. This is actually worse than Zillow Going Wild. I'm going to give this a 1.5.
Whoa. Sounds like I have to watch it now.
I guess so. You've seen the show before. So even if you like watched half of one episode, you go, oh, I've seen this show already. Like it's a show that you've seen 100 times 20 years ago. Right.
Okay. I saw Spacey Unmasked on Channel 4 in the UK.
Okay.
This is about Kevin Spacey. In 2023, he was acquitted of sexual offenses against 4 men. This documentary, like, goes through his conduct, and they talk to multiple men, not only the people that was, like, accusing him. And, a lot of people that has never spoken before. I found it a little bit too, what's the word I'm looking for? A little too, you know, when people are trying to get you and you're trying to prove your point, you kind of have decided before you like want to present people with a case.
Bias?
It felt a little, yeah, it felt very biased. Thank you. And I'm not going to say Kevin Spacey is not a creepy old man. I'm sure he is. But it was super boring, super uninteresting. I was so bored, and it was only two episodes. I cannot recommend this. This is very low made as well to be a British documentary. But I will give it a two. Yeah, a two.
Okay.
Yeah, hated it.
There's something on Food Network. Selena plus restaurant.
Yeah.
I guess this is a spin-off show of some other Selena.
It is. Yes.
Show that I don't remember.
Selena
I don't think I ever saw.
Selena plus chef. Yeah.
Which I never saw, but this is a direct spin-off of that because at the beginning of the show she says,
"Yeah,
I did this many cooking challenges to get prepared to do one thing, and this show is the culmination of her learning to cook on another show." But in this, she meets up with a chef and tries to create her own dish for a restaurant, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's very, for people that have seen the previous show, it's just like that. Just that it's out of her home. She started Selena plus Chef because of COVID.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
She didn't have anything to do, and she wanted to learn how to cook.
Right.
So, more or less, she was bored. And that was a pretty big success. I mean, I didn't watch all of it. I saw two episodes and I was out. But, yeah, no, she's become a better chef.
Sure, I guess so. They set her up at the Wolf King Puck restaurant, I guess, which I've always found him funny comedically. Like,
yeah, he's
just a funny dude. Yeah. I don't know if it's the accent that does it for me or what, but...
No, I agree.
And I think they play well off of each other as far as their chemistry.
Yeah.
And then there's this other friend of hers that's just there, but I'm assuming she was in the first show, right?
I don't remember.
Right.
It's a long fucking time since I saw that show.
If you haven't seen the first one, I don't think you're missing anything, but I don't really understand why her friend is there other than just comedic relief in a way, because in the first episode, she, like, eats a pepper and gets...
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah. So maybe that's kind of her role, is kind of be the comedic part of the equation, which makes sense. But I think Wolfgang Puck is already pretty funny. I mean, it was fine as far as a cooking show goes.
Yeah.
It has an interesting spin on cooking shows. It's not like your standard cooking show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll probably do well. So I think a 6.5 is probably safe.
Oh, okay. I gave it a 5.5. Yeah.
I'd probably give it an extra point for just originality in that it's so different from other cooking shows, yeah.
Okay, we're keeping it in the UK. I Kissed a Girl. Can you guess what this reality show is all about, Luke?
Katy Perry, I guess?
Good guess.
Okay.
Do you know who Danny Minogue is?
Kylie Minogue's brother or sister, possibly?
Sister, yes, yes.
Because Danny is a both ways name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have a reality show with her on BBC Three where lesbians meet and the first thing they do, instead of like handshakes, is kissing.
Oh, so that cut thing from YouTube where... Cut has a thing on YouTube where it's called Love at First Kiss. So,
okay.
I think that's probably where they got it.
this is a spin-off of a show I have never seen. So, I'm like, they talk a lot about, like, oh, Danny Minogue is back. And I'm like, from what?
Right. From where is a better question. Where's she been, exactly?
Yeah. And now she's here with girls. And I was like, oh, there's another reality show? So I was a little bit lost. But, it's lesbians meeting each other and kissing each other. If you want to see that show, you can see it on BBC Three, I guess. Reality show, it's very cookie, but yeah, no, I will give it a 3.5.
All right, let's tone change quite a bit to the Tattooist of Auschwitz, which is about the Holocaust.
Yeah, talk about switching.
Right, we're going to sandwich this, and then you can do a funnier show right after this. That way it's not as depressing.
Oh my god, it's depressing.
It's well shot, the acting's decent. Oh, it's about the camps during the Holocaust, so it's super depressing.
So depressing.
And just bad timing to put a show out like this, I want to say, as far as like the political state of the world currently. Putting a show out like this is just divisive, I think. So, I don't know, the time...
I agree.
It's well made, just the timing of it is just not great timing. When I went on Peacock... Go ahead.
No, I have read the book this is based on,
mm-hmm.
and it was very close to the book. I really... when I read the book, I kind of made images in my head, and I felt like they followed the book very good, and they kind of took the most powerful moments of the book into this. And it is a real life story of this Leil Sokolov, and it's such a fucking amazing acting job. Like, the man that plays the tattooist of Auschwitz, he's amazeballs.
Yeah, it's well done. Like I said, it's just it's hard to not to watch it without a lens, or it's looking at it as like, it's definitely hard to watch for sure.
Yeah,
but that's what it's made to be. It's made to be hard to watch. So exactly. I understand what they're going for. Yeah. All in all, I mean, a 7, probably. I mean, it's well made at everything. It's just, you know, this. I think the most interesting part is the setup of, like, he's being interviewed, and then you're seeing it.
Right.
Instead of it just being 100% drama, that makes it a little more interesting, so, yeah.
I also thought that was very powerful, that I actually have interviews with him.
Right.
I liked it to an 8, actually. I really liked it to an 8. Well, talking about smoke, People Magazine investigates surviving a serial killer. Can you talk about a longer title, please?
Yeah, that's catchy.
It's so fucking catchy. Guess what it is about? It's people that have survived serial killers that tell their stories.
Sounds interesting, but it sounds like that same kind of murder show I was talking about earlier. Low quality, bad reenactment kind of show. Yeah, okay.
And it's also People's Magazine presents.
Oh, so even better.
Yeah. Huh?
So even better.
So even better, yeah, because we all love People's Magazine. Yeah, no, this was atrociously bad. Look, you kind of have to watch it to believe how incredibly bad it was. I'm giving it a 1. Almost a 0.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about OMG Fashion on the E! Network, Fro? Did you see this?
No.
Oh my gosh. Literally, OMG. go look it up. It's OMG Fash UN. F-A-S-H-U-N, OMG Fashion. It was a new series this week. It's a competition fashion show with this woman, what's her name? Something Fox. I don't even remember. Julia Fox.
It's a magazine?
It might be a magazine also, but this is the name of the television show on E! As well. It's a lot like other fashion competition shows, but it's totally out there, ridiculous, insane fashion, where, like, nobody except for somebody on a red carpet's gonna wear it kind of fashion, you know what I mean? Okay. And it's a $10,000 prize. It's got three hosts that are a little out there, including this Julia Fox lady, who is incredibly full of herself.
I hate her.
Yeah, she is very unlikable. Most people on the show are super likable, except for the person it's made about, which is very strange. Yeah. I don't know why that is. But she comes off as just self-centered and over the top, I guess. Rich, entitled, possibly.
Yeah.
A little bit. The show itself is kind of dumb.
She was the worst thing in Uncut Gems.
I don't even remember her being in that. But if I saw her in it, I probably would.
Yeah, no, she's terrible.
The whole point of it is, like, she is going to... first of all, whoever wins the competition out of the three people who are vying each episode, they each, like, make two outfits, and then somebody wins out of those outfits. The outfit then she wears for in front of the paparazzi. Not even to, like, an event or something. It's just she's going to go out of her house to the store or something in this outfit. But they also win $10,000. So that's probably what they're really there for. Like I said, it's not real fashion in that nobody's really going to wear this except for somebody, like, on the red carpet or at, like, a fashion show. It's that weird, out there, crazy fashion. Like, so it's a little cringy also. I don't know. The whole thing... Reality show-wise, it's also only, like, 20 minutes long. It's a very short show.
Okay.
Which these shows are usually at least an hour. I'm going to give it it's a 3. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to go down to a 2.
Okay. Look, have you ever thought to yourself, holy fuck, I need a new baking show?
No.
You haven't? Oh, then you should see Next Baking Master Paris. From the Food Network.
Oh, I thought you were going to say next, the Spring Baker's Bake Off or whatever it is that's happening right now.
No, it's called Next Baking Master Paris. Okay. Yeah. The two hosts, Stephanie and Ludo, they invite 10 up and coming, of course, American bakers. To travel to the epicenter of the sweet universe, Paris. And then they bake. And they bake a little. And guess what they bake? And the lowest performance baking pastries chef is sent home. Have you ever heard of that thing before? Where the weakest chef has to go home. It's so...
original.
It's so original and new. Yeah. I give it a 2.
I mean, was there an interesting host, or is it just a random-ass person that you've never heard of?
I have never heard of these two people before, but...
Oh, okay.
Could be... People know them from baking, I guess.
All right, a remake of a British show that's now... remade by Americans, so you know it's good. There was a British show called Friday Night Dinner, and this is called Dinner with the Parents. Yes.
Michaela
Watkins, Carol Kane, John Glazer, Daniel Thrasher. There's a lot of good actors in this show, to be honest.
There
good
is. Comedy I actors. I wish the show was as good as the actors.
Certain parts of it I liked, and certain parts of it I didn't like. Yeah, I think some of the comedy is funny, and I just don't like the way it's filmed. Like, I don't like the stylistic choices. It doesn't quite feel like a sitcom, but it doesn't quite feel like a drama. I wanted it to be more sitcom-like, I think. It definitely... You felt the British humor coming out of the American show, but maybe that's the one thing I liked about it. The acting's not great, and... the storyline's pretty silly and dumb, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I didn't like it at all. I have seen the original, though, so...
Oh.
It's kind of like, yeah.
You're a little biased on that.
I'm a little bit biased on that. I gave it a 3.
I don't remember seeing the original. Doesn't mean I haven't seen it. Yeah. But this one is about a guy who is struggling in his relationships, I guess. Well, really not in the first episode, but in the show, he's struggling in his relationships, and he has dinner with his parents every Sunday, which is a British thing. And so they act like in this, when they talk about it in this American context, they're like, we as a family just have always done Sunday dinner together. But like in the British context, it makes sense because that's just a British thing to do. In this, they have to like make a whole point that like this family specifically does that, right? Which is a little weird and awkward. But I think some of the acting's good. I think the worst actor in this is the main character. Which is a real hint.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Totally agree.
I think everybody else in it is very good. I'd give this I'm going to give this a 6.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, I gave it a 3. I didn't like it.
I like sitcoms more than you do as well, which it definitely had sitcom tendencies, but a little more drama-esque, like I said, which I wanted to see a little more sitcom version of this.
Was that the last thing you saw?
No, I've got 2 more things.
Okay, I have 1 more thing. Did you say Charter Lake by any chance?
No, I didn't.
I think this is either Disney Plus or Hulu or something like that.
Okay.
So, it is based on a book series that I very much like. And it is in the Cromwell times, so it's like the Cromwell times.
Okay.
When the Cromwells was in power in the UK.
Okay.
So it's like middle age. Right. But it's so I would say it's like it's a little bit like. Sherlock Holmes just set in middle age time. But some very good actors in this. Anthony Boyle is in it. He's really good in it. Arthur Hughes, he's very good. I liked it. I will say that I think this is more my cup of tea than yours. I liked it to a 7. I liked historical mystery novels, and I thought it was a very good interpretation of the 16th century Tudor England. So I liked it.
Yeah, I don't like time period stuff like that. Usually, no. I don't want to say all the time, but usually, Lux Listings Toronto.
Okay.
It's a luxury housing show where it's like real estate agents, so kind of like Selling Miami or something like that, except Toronto. Which specifically they point out Drake's house, which we'll talk maybe a little about Drake later.
Yes, we will.
Right. These guys sell houses in that same kind of neighborhood, same part of Canada. But it's about one family who's been doing it for many years, and then another guy who's like kind of an up-and-comer in the real estate market in Toronto.
Okay.
It's mostly about seeing houses. So, like I said, if you're one of those people who likes going around on Zillow and
yeah.
and looking at houses, this is a show for you. But it's also a reality show in that it's like they're trying to be the Kardashians or something of real estate. It's like a family who is all doing it together. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And they go to parties and there's drama and things like that. A little more in depth than some house market shows. I don't know. It's not great. It's Canadian. It feels very Canadian. I'll give this a 5, right in the middle. It could have been much worse. It definitely is a commercial again, just for their housing retailer or whatever you want to call it.
Mm. Is your last show A Man in Full?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Let's talk about it. A Man in Full with Jeff. I have never been in anything good, but what has he been in that's good? Nothing.
he was in The Newsroom, which was a TV show.
Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber was good. Dumb and Dumber 2 yeah. was also kind of good. He was yeah. in Speed, apparently, I'm seeing.
Oh.
I think he was one of the cops in that.
Yeah, this is not Succession at all. At all. Okay. No, not at all. Not Succession.
No.
It's definitely not Succession. Definitely not trying to be Succession at all.
It's about a guy who is a rich, powerful dude who is in debt massively to the banks, and it's kind of a power struggle between him and the banks, but then there's these side characters that are all involved in the situation, but are additional to that. They have additional storylines happening on the side of the main storyline, mm-hmm. which is the Jeff Daniels versus the bank. But some of the side characters work for the bank. Some of the side characters work for Jeff Daniels. That's the basic breakdown, right? There's way too many fucking yeah. characters happening in the show.
It's so fucking many.
But that's true for Succession also, right? Like, yes. It's just... there's
very much...
And yeah. that's what people like about it, I guess, is that there's a lot happening, but it feels very soap opera-esque.
Yeah, so I liked Billions, and I kind of liked Succession. I really didn't like this. I really didn't. It's not my cup of tea. It usually is, and it's even by, like, the David E. Kelly production line.
Okay.
And he usually likes makes movies like this. It's supposed to be funny as well, and I didn't it? Really get that.
No, yeah. I didn't think this was supposed to be funny, or if it was, it
call,
didn't hit.
They call it a comedy, like, in their, like, release thing, okay. and I didn't
I,
really...
I don't maybe that got, like, edited out in the last final edit before they... you know what I mean? Because that was not there in this...
I think my biggest problem with this is maybe Jeff Daniels' accent. It's all over the fucking place. I think the best thing about this
well,
is
they
actually...
pointed that out in it. The guy says, oh, his accent changes depending on... They even point that... They made an excuse for it in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
But I didn't, like... yeah. I think the best thing is his new wife. I really like her. She's funny.
Okay. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of from Succession too though, right? That whole
Yeah.
Dynamic, yeah.
All is like stolen.
I mean, the acting's good. There's tons of good actors in this. Like we said, Jeff yeah. Daniels, there's who else? Lucy Liu's in there.
Deanne Lane is in here.
What's his name?
Sarah Jones.
John Michael Hill. Him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I always like him. He's really good from what? Dexter or something. Some cop show that I'm not remembering the name, what he was in. I don't know. Yeah, it was fine, but just very boring. That's what I thought.
Extremely boring. Yeah. I gave it the 5.
Oh, it was from Elementary. That's what I was... Yeah, that was the show.
I gave it the 5.
Yeah, I think a 4 is better for me. It's just... The pacing was not there. And it was trying to be, like... It was copying too much, for sure.
I definitely agree to that. Lovers and Liars episode 4 is the last TV show we will have watched.
Yeah, Call Me Toxic. The game heats up as the women question Camille's intentions with Casey. After a great first date, one woman sparks big doubts for all the others falling for Benedict. CJ catches feelings for a new gal on a water adventure. Right, which... It was one of those, like, swan boats. That's not really an adventure, I guess.
Well, we found out this episode that this is the same fucking place they recorded another reality show that we had seen.
No, it wasn't really, but it just looked like it. But it literally, when they do a zoom out, we realize that they're on a golf course somewhere in, like...
I had said that, like, 2 episodes ago or something.
Right.
Yeah.
But this time they did, like, a drone shot where they pulled up out of the lake where they were doing this boating. And you could see the golf course off to the right-hand side, which they... They've been good about hiding it up till now, but, yeah.
Mm.
It was very clear. And like we said, this isn't filmed in, like, a tropical island, but they try to make it look like the whole thing is set in a tropical island, right?
But yeah, this was a very Camille-heavy episode. I mean, most of the drama was about her.
She was the one guy's favorite up until now, and she said something to one girl, and another girl heard it and took it as though she was talking shit about him, which... I think she kind of was, or maybe she was...
She kind of did, yeah.
Yeah, but in a way, like, the other girl ratting her out is kind of weird. But she didn't end up getting kicked out at the end anyways. Like, she got picked for being one of the two to be kicked out, but the other girl ended up getting kicked out instead. One of the new girls, because they added three new girls last episode. Yeah.
So they kicked out one bad girl and two good ones, like?
Right, yeah. So
the
CJ, the one that CJ picked was one of the bad girls. Mm. The new girl, one of the new girls, the blonde one, was good. And then, the Ashley girl.
Oh my god, yes.
Who is
Let's
like,
talk about her.
I don't even think they kicked her out because... She was like, they thought she was an F girl. They just kicked her out because nobody wanted her there. Yeah.
Yeah. She's been so annoying the whole show.
And awkward.
And awkward, yeah. She's been interrupting dates. And like, I'm going to say something a little bit rude. A lot of women are so fucking amazingly beautiful. She's not.
I mean, she has, like, an innocence to her, but at the same time, she just doesn't seem to understand what's happening a lot of the time.
Yes.
Like, she's totally lost in the situation.
No social cues.
Right, yeah. So she'll just... somebody will be talking, and she'll just, like, walk up to them and start interjecting herself in the conversation, even though it's, like, a deep thing or a deep conversation that's happening. It's very clear to everybody else involved. She just doesn't know what's going on. Yeah. I think I said about it was, like, it seems like maybe she's, like, the producer's niece or something.
Yeah. Very much so. The most boring episode so far, would you agree?
I think it was, I mean, other than the Camille stuff, which, was somewhat interesting, but not as exciting as the previous episode, I would, I'd give this episode a 5.5, I guess.
Yeah, 5.5 is totally okay.
If you want a free audiobook from Audible, you can go to audibletrial.com/ADC. That's audibletrial.com/ADC for a free membership to Audible and a free audiobook. Cancel any time. You get to keep the free book, at least if you cancel any time before the end of the month. It helps us out.
Does. Absolutely. We don't have a lot of Eurovision things to talk about this week, because we have one single song. But let's talk about Bessa with Titan from Albania.
Okay.
We should maybe talk a little about the old version. That was, for people that remember, back when we saw the original, it's the lady that falls over on stage almost because her shoes are too big, and she looks like the Statue of Liberty.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it was one of the first, I want to say it was in the first week, or maybe first 2 weeks.
I think so.
That we were doing it, and it wasn't well produced. I think other thing, we were watching the stage performance, and this is a music video, so there's going to be a difference in quality there, but this felt more highly produced than that original song for sure, in the beat and the vocals of it. But like I said, it could be just that we're watching a music video.
I like this version better. I think the English translation of it was really good. Like, now I kind of like understand what it is about, like being strong like a titan, I will survive and things like that.
Okay.
I think it has moved up my list of I'm not sure if it will qualify tomorrow, but I think so. I have a strength.
It definitely felt like they redid the beat of this in some way to like make it cleaner feeling to me. It's going to be on tomorrow, or was it out yesterday?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we don't. Mm-hmm. I think it has a good chance of qualifying. I think the problem is, making this change right at the end could hinder them in voting because nobody has seen it as much as other songs, if that makes sense. They haven't gotten the attachment to it as much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with that. And I also think that a lot of people give, and this is silly, but a lot of people do give points to countries that sing in their mother language more than it seems like American or English songs nowadays.
I think that's going to change, though, because of the new voting rules.
Yeah, I also think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about the semifinal. Who got through, Luke?
Cyprus, Serbia... this is the running order. Let's see. Is that right? So yeah, Cyprus, Serbia, Lithuania, Ireland, Ukraine, Croatia, Slovenia, Finland, Portugal, and Luxembourg, which, from what I looked up last night, was the biggest surprise, maybe, out of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Just because they're the new kid on the block, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It was also a little bit funny that they got picked last. So I kind of think they, when they did like, oh, Serbia is going through, Cyprus is going through, they said Luxembourg last, and I think that they did that for tension.
Are any of the songs that didn't make it a surprise to you? That's a question.
No.
No, me neither.
I don't like any of them.
Me neither. These were all songs that we didn't like. I can remember every one of these songs, and we didn't like a single one of them. I saw a lot of people were like upset about Australia because apparently it had like kind of a cult following. But that I didn't like that
I
song.
Have never understood Australia.
Right.
I never understood it.
It's I read
terrible.
Two articles in the last week of people being like, there's like a big, I don't know, there's a certain demographic of people who really like that song, so.
Mm-hmm. So tomorrow is semi-final two, with Malta, Albania, Greece, Switzerland, Czechia, Austria, Denmark, Armenia, Latvia, San Marino, Georgia, Belgium, Estonia, Israel, Norway, and the Netherlands.
Okay.
I think we will go through, not easy, but I think... Yeah.
All right, now that we're done with Eurovision, coming next week, news of the week, TV of the week, Tron Tells the Truth again, Lovers and Liars episode 5. We'll see what's happening with that. It's kind of gotten boring this episode, but we'll see what happens next episode.
Yeah, like we said.
Eurovision finals review, I guess, as well as the semifinal, but we're mostly just going to talk about the final, probably, because it's this weekend. Yeah. If you guys want more podcasting content with Fro, go to check out that wrestling show. If you want to find it, we post it every week on our Twitter. Go to Twitter, check it out easily there, and find that wrestling show Twitter. What else? You know what else is coming next week that I saw last night?
No.
They're going to have a Havana Syndrome hearing. For apparently there's some guy who's a lawyer who is suing the government, saying that they're lying about certain aspects of Havana Syndrome. But this lawyer is defending the clients who say they were attacked by Havana Syndrome. So he's like pro Havana Syndrome, and he's suing the government saying that they're lying about Havana Syndrome. So that happens tomorrow. We'll see what happens with that.
Ooh. That will be interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about Drake, Luke.
Yeah, Drake.
Oh my god.
There's so much to go in, and I've seen so many videos, and I have a concept of what is happening, but it mostly is like internal beef with like rappers who are friends with each other, but specifically Kendrick Lamar and Drake, who aren't friends, but have mutual friends, I guess, who then the beefs, there was a whole beef lyrically between them, and then just yesterday there was some kind of shooting at Drake's house, right?
Mm-hmm. And also he has been talked about for grooming.
That's been around forever because of the Millie Bobby Brown stuff. Yeah, and that's like a known thing, but that. I think what happened is Kendrick brought it up in one of the diss tracks. Because they've been going back and forth with diss tracks on YouTube. And it seems like what's happening with the diss tracks is that Kendrick is doing the thing that all rappers do, which is be boastful. That's like part of being a rapper is you say, I'm the best rapper, I'm better than you, like, there's a whole thing called battle rapping, which that's the whole point of being a battle rapper, is to say you're the best rapper, right?
Right.
And then Drake doesn't seem to understand and is, like, getting really actually butthurt about it, is what it seems like to me.
Yeah, I found an article on GQ that I posted in the Podlinks that goes through the Kendrick Lamar Drake beef. So on March 29th, Kendrick Lamar declares war on an album that may have been wholly dedicated to dissing Drake. So that's how it started.
No, it started before that. That's the thing. Like, that's like where people started where people started dissecting it. But what if you listen? The lyrics of that go into the history of them. So it starts, even in the lyrics, it points out that they've been beefing for a while, and then that's why he made the album to begin with. Because why would he make the album unless they'd already been beefing, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
Right. So April 5th to 7th, J. Cole enters the fray and immediately exit. I have never heard about this J. Cole. He's a rapper, I'm assuming.
Yeah, he's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
then he deleted his because he was going after Kendrick and got totally destroyed. And a lot of other rappers have gotten involved in the fray, but it all is ended up with the very final Kendrick diss track and then the very final Drake diss track, at least up until this point, where they did some back and forth very recently, where Drake came out with a diss track, and Kendrick was able to come out with his own diss track 1 hour later, like in between when one came out and when the other one came out.
It just says here that April 13, Drake hits back at Kendrick and everyone else with Push Up. That is his rap, I'm assuming.
And then Kendrick came out with another one. What was it called? Something.
Drake drops Taylor Made, an AO troll stunt, something Kendrick to replay Push Up in April 19th. And then Kendrick crowns himself the big hater with Euphoria, a 6-minute Drake diss trap. 6 minutes? Like what? And then Kendrick pushes back with 1616 in LA.
Right, that's the one that he came out with an hour after the other one. Right.
And then Drake takes the glove off with Family Matters. Jesus Christ. Then Kendrick immediately with bars with Drake's family, including alleged daughter. Yeah, that was his girlfriend. And then Kendrick spins the block again with Not Like Us. That is so fucking weird. And then there was the shooting yesterday.
Right, and then before that, there was another one, Heart Part 6, and then the shooting happened. The beef is like in the wrap, so people have to like dissect it. So there's whole, right. There's a whole community of people on TikTok and YouTube and stuff dissecting like the genius lines, the website in these wraps and trying to figure out exactly what everything means, because a lot of it has double meanings, because that's like part of rap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very complex and very confusing, and we cannot go into all of it because we would make an hour and a half show just on that, basically.
So, what do you think will happen? Will they just...
It's already over. Drake is already lost. There's no coming back from this for Drake, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, he's been called... Basically, the whole rap community called him out and said, like, you're not a real rapper. And so, where do you go from there? I don't know. I mean, he was the guy from Degrassi, so...
That is true. Yeah, that is the only thing I've seen on YouTube this week. Because guess what? Eurovision.
Right. The only other thing I saw was this... a woman who faked her pregnancy on YouTube to get a Patreon going to support her pregnancy, and then came out a few weeks later saying, I lied about that. I was wearing a fake pregnancy belly. But what happened is really in one of her live streams, somebody, I think she opened up her Amazon like cart or something, and they saw the fake pregnancy belly in the Amazon cart just for like a split second. And so people started to be like, wait, is this real? Is this not real? And then she came out and said, oh, yeah, I faked the whole thing. But she was taking money for her pregnancy. So that was a really big scandal. But now she's saying it was a social experiment. And I say that in air quotes, right?
Yeah, to all our video listeners.
Right. There's Crab Souls, which everybody's playing. I don't know if you've seen that, which is like this... Nope. Everybody's calling it the Dark Souls of Crab games. So go look at that. That's kind of hilarious. And the last thing I had was this week. Remember back in the day, it was years ago, I was watching the H3 podcast and I was like, I like this show, but it's not a podcast. Remember me saying that at all? I think it was, they had done Silent Library, like the Japanese game show. They had done a Silent Library thing, and it was like a one-off part. Like, it wasn't even part of the podcast or whatever. And I was like, you can't do Silent Library in podcast form. That's just not how podcasting works. And I was like, this isn't a podcast. And I've always kind of maintained that. And then this week, they changed their name to the H3 show. They're no longer the H3 podcast, which... I agree with, and I've been saying for years. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, Eurovision this weekend. That is what we will talk a lot about next week. So,
yeah.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Another digital citizen.
Another digital citizen.
Another digital citizen.
Another digital citizen. 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 Citizen.